The Night Sky for February 2008 is part of the Jodcast. For the show notes and archives, go to jodcast.net.
Well, following a month, that's January, where the skies were rarely clear, certainly in the north of England, let's hope that February is rather better. And it really is one of the best months of the year to start observing the heavens. The skyscape in the south in the evening is purely wonderful. At the centre, you have the constellation of Orion the Hunter. Three stars make up his belt, and below hangs a sword of Orion, where with binoculars you can see a hazy glow. It's the Orion Nebula, or M42. It's a birthplace of stars, and a lovely object to observe with a small telescope. Those three stars act as quite nice pointers. If you move up to the right, you come, first of all, to the cluster of stars called the Hyades that makes up the head of Taurus the Bull. The bright star Aldebaran that we see there is in fact not part of the Hyades cluster, but a foreground star. If you carry on in the same direction, you come to that little beautiful star cluster, the Pleiades. A wonderful object in binoculars or a small telescope. Above the constellation of Orion, we have the constellation of Auriga, with Capella, a yellow star, almost overhead. It's part of the sky where the Milky Way passes through, so with binoculars you see quite a rich skyscape, and there are a number of very nice star clusters that you can pick out relatively easily. To the lower left of Auriga, we have the constellation of Gemini, the heavenly twins. It's a very nice cluster, M35, near the foot of one of the twins. Now, this is the area where the planet Mars has been throughout the last few months. It was in Gemini. It moved back into Taurus. That's called retrograde motion, because the Earth was sort of travelling around on the inside track, and it appeared that Mars was moving backwards in the sky. Well, in fact, on the 1st of February, it actually changed its direction again, and it starts moving back through Taurus and then back into Gemini. Below Gemini is a single star, Procyon. It's almost the only bright star in the constellation of Canis Minor. And then below that, down to the left of those three stars of Orion, we have Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, the dog star of Canis Major, the great dog. Below that, with binoculars or a telescope, there's a very sweet little star cluster called M41, well worth looking out for, just a few degrees below Sirius. As the night progresses, Leo the Lion is moving up into the southeast, and below Leo, you'll see an interloper as well, and that's the planet Saturn, but more of that shortly. Okay, well, I've mentioned a couple of the planets. Let's look at them in a little bit more detail. So let's start with Jupiter, but in fact we can combine that with Venus because they're both in the pre-dawn sky. And in fact, on the 1st of February, there's the closest conjunction of Venus and Jupiter that we'll have until 2014. And Venus will be just up and to the left, 0.6 degrees of Jupiter. So they're really very close. Binoculars would be a lovely way to view them, just as the sun is about to rise. In fact, this morning, which is the last day of January, I did in fact pick them up as I came into work. So look out for Venus and Jupiter. As the month goes by, Jupiter begins to rise earlier than the sun, so you see it more easily. But conversely, Venus is moving in the other direction and becomes less easy to see. However, it is still worth looking out for, because from February the 23rd onwards, for several weeks in fact, Venus and Mercury are very, very close. And on February the 23rd, they're only about 1 degree apart. Now, they won't be high above the horizon, but if you do pick up Venus, use binoculars, you will see Mercury. And I suspect many people have never actually seen Mercury. So from around the 23rd of February, a very good chance to see Mercury. Well, I mentioned Saturn a little bit earlier. It's in the constellation of Leo the Lion, just below the body of the lion, and about 7 degrees down to the lower left of the bright star Regulus. It's not quite as bright as it usually is, because the rings of Saturn, which are inclined to the ecliptic, are actually getting, from our point of view, at a narrower and narrower angle. And in fact, next year in 2009, they will disappear for a while when they're edge on. So I think the angle is now only about 5 to 8 degrees. And so they don't reflect as much light. And perhaps Saturn isn't quite as beautiful an object to see as it sometimes is. But it's still very, very worth seeing. And as the next couple of months progress, Leo rises in the sky earlier and you'll have a better chance to see Saturn as well. Well, that just leaves the planet Mars. Now, in December, Mars was at opposition. In fact, on the 18th of December, it came as close to the Earth as it gets, or as it got, on this particular apparition. So it's now moving further away. It's in the constellation of Taurus, moving gently towards Gemini. And I saw it last night, actually. It was clear. It really is very high in the sky. So although the angular size is now only about 12 arc seconds, down from a best of about 15, because it's high in the sky, there's a lot less atmosphere to see it through, and the views with a small telescope can in fact be very, very good, perhaps even better than when Mars was 25 arc seconds across when we saw it back in 2003. So there's a lot to see, and there's one fine little bit of icing on the cake. Last year, we had a wonderful eclipse of the moon. This year, we have another one, not quite so well timed. Last year's was in the evening, but this year's in the early morning. But if you're prepared to get up early on February the 21st, starting in fact at 35 minutes past midnight, the moon will actually first go into the penumbra of the Earth and then into the shadow, the full shadow, the umbra, reaching the umbra and fully within the umbra by about 3 o'clock, 1 minute past three. The midpoint of the eclipse is at 3:26, and it starts coming out of the umbra, the full shadow, at 3:52. We see the total eclipse from the United Kingdom in the early hours of the morning. Now, of course, if you're in the United States of America, things are a little bit different, and you'll be able to watch the eclipse, not all of it, I might say, as darkness falls, and later in the middle of the night. Now, I have to say that the passage of the moon is rather close to one side of the umbra. It's not right at the center. And that means one side, I think, of the moon won't appear all that dark. We should see a lovely reddish-brown color, perhaps even a reddy-orange color, for the part that's furthest into the shadow, but maybe a little bit whiter near the other side. Why do we see it at all? Very simply because if you were at the moon and you looked at the Earth, although the sun's behind the Earth wouldn't totally disappear. Sunlight can actually work its way round through the atmosphere. Now, as we see, the sun is red when it's low on the horizon, so the light that actually comes through the atmosphere has had the blue light scattered out and is predominantly red. So that red light reaches the moon, and that's why we see the moon with this sort of reddish colour. The colour that we see of the moon depends a lot upon the amount of dust in the atmosphere. After a major eruption from a volcano like Mount St. Helens some years ago, there's a lot of dust in the atmosphere, very little light passes through it, and in fact the moon almost disappears, a very dull grey colour. But at the moment, we haven't had any major volcanoes for some time. The atmosphere is relatively clear. Last year, it was a lovely browny red colour. Let's hope for an equally good view of the moon this February the 21st. I do hope it's clear so you can have a look.